Oh, well, yes, but I've been retired from practice since. We need you to come out of retirement long enough to draw up a certain paper, Roland said, and then explained what sort of paper he wanted. Deepnow was nodding before the gunslinger had done more than get started, and Eddie assumed Tower had already told his friend this part of it. That was okay. What he didn't like was the expression on the old fellow's face. Still, Deepnow let Roland finish. He hadn't forgotten the basics of relating to potential clients, it seemed, retired or not. When he was sure Roland was finished, Deepnow said, I feel I must tell you that Calvin has decided to hold on to that particular piece of property a little longer. Eddie thumped the unwounded side of his head, being careful to use his right hand for this bit of theater. His left arm was stiffening up, and his leg was once more starting to throb between the knee and the ankle. He supposed it was possible that good old Aaron was traveling with some heavy-duty painkillers and made a mental note to ask for a few if he was. "Cry pardon," Eddie said, "but I took a knock on the head while I was arriving in this charming little town, and I think it screwed up my hearing. I thought you said that that Mr. Tower had decided against selling us the lot." Deepnow smiled rather wearily. "You know perfectly well what I said." "But he's supposed to sell it to us. He had a letter from Stefan Torin, his three times great-grandfather, saying just that."
"Cal says different," Aaron responded mildly. "Have another strawberry, Mr. Dean."
"No, thank you."
"Have another strawberry, Eddie," Roland said, and handed him one. Eddie took it, considered squashing it against Long, Tall, and Ugly's beak just for the hell of it, then dipped it first in a saucer of cream, then in the sugar bowl. He began to eat. And damn, it was hard to stay bitter with that much sweetness flooding your mouth, a fact of which Roland, Deepnow too for that matter, was surely aware. "According to Cal," Deepnow said, "there was nothing in the envelope he had from Stefan Torin except for this man's name." He tilted his mostly hairless head toward Roland. "Torin's will, what was in the olden days sometimes called a dead letter, was long gone." "I knew what was in the envelope," Eddie said. "He asked me, and I knew."
"So he told me," Deepnow regarded him expressionlessly. "He said it was a trick any street-corner magician could do.
Did he also tell you that he promised to sell us the lot if I could tell him the name, that he fucking promised?"
"He claims to have been under considerable stress when he made that promise, as I am sure he was."
"Does the son of a bitch think we mean to weasel on him?"
Eddie asked. His temples were thudding with rage. Had he ever been so angry? Once, he supposed, when Roland had refused to let him go back to New York so he could score some horse.
"Is that it? Because we won't. We'll come up with every cent he wants, and more, I swear it on the face of my father and on the heart of my dean."
"Listen to me carefully, young man, because this is important."
Eddie glanced at Roland. Roland nodded slightly, then crushed out his cigarette on one boot heel. Eddie looked back at Deepnow, silent but glowering.
"He says that is exactly the problem. He says you'll pay him some ridiculously low token amount, $1 is the usual sum in such cases, and then stiff him for the rest. He claims you tried to hypnotize him into believing you were a supernatural being or someone with access to supernatural beings, not to mention access to millions from the Holmes Dental Corporation, but he was not fooled."
Eddie gaped at him.
"These are things Calvin says," Deepnow continued in that same calm voice. "But they are not necessarily the things Calvin believes."
"What in hell do you mean?"
"Calvin has issues with letting go of things," Deepnow said. "He is quite good at finding rare and antiquarian books, you know, a regular literary Sherlock Holmes, and he is compulsive about acquiring them. I've seen him hound the owner of a book he wants, I'm afraid there's no other word that really fits, until the book's owner gives in and sells. Sometimes just to make Cal stop calling on the telephone, I'm sure. Given his talents, his location, and the considerable sum of money to which he gained complete access on his 26th birthday, Cal should have been one of the most successful antiquarian book dealers in New York, or in the whole country.